it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
First thing I have to ask you, Spud, is when did you get the nickname Spud? Like, at what point did people stop calling you Anthony and they started pretty much only calling you Spud?
Well, it's a story to it that my mom and dad friend that came to the hospital with them, it's in 63, the Russian satellite was out, and it was the Sputnik. And one of my dad's friends goes, he has a big head like a Sputnik. And, you know, as you get in the neighborhood, the little kids wouldn't say Sputnik, and they thought everybody was saying Spud. So I got Spud from day one, but it's not on the birth certificate. The real name is Anthony.
I guess I wrongfully assumed. I should have started with how did that come about. I assumed it had something to do, like us short guys, there's always a nickname for us because of our height, and I guess I thought that it had to do with that, but this is a day one of your existence thing.
Yeah, we black folks had this great sense of humor, and I got a call to Big Head when from day one when 63 when the Russian satellite out was Sputnik, and kids started shortening it to Spud, and I grew up till I was cognizant enough to learn your real name is Anthony.
I bet you have friends who don't even know what your real name is, because it seems like you only get called Spud these days.
Oh, absolutely. I can, a lot of them and people come around that, know me, go Anthony. They're like, who is
<Who's> that?
But I have fun with it in the airport sometimes, because some people point at you and go, you look, what's your name? I say Anthony. They're like, you look just like Spud Webb. I am. I'm just playing with you.
Spud, you are DFW zone. You were born and grew up in the Metroplex. And my understanding is that you didn't necessarily grow up in the best of circumstances. How would you describe your upbringing and the challenges that maybe you and your family dealt with?
Well, I'm still apologizing to my parents for asking for some of the stuff I asked for. No, we didn't have any money. But my first 6-7 years of my life, I grew up in the West Dallas Projects, Fish Trap. And then we made a lateral movement. My dad started working in South Dallas, and we moved to Oak Cliff, and that's where I grew up. And they say this famous song out called Holland Hill, That's My Hood. I grew up in that neighborhood, and it's right across the street from now Paul Quinn is Bishop College, which is a real, 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 poor area. And I'm lucky that I had the Dallas Boys and Girls Club that built in our neighborhood when I turned, I think, maybe 9 or 10 years old, that kind of saved some of us.
How did basketball, and maybe that was all a part of the Boys and Girls Club experience, but how did basketball help you through those times, maybe serve as an outlet and obviously eventually a career, but early on, how did basketball help you as a child growing up?
Well, the Boys Club, actually, man, we had a guy up there named Alvin Jordan. We thought he was like, the biggest person we ever seen in our lives, so we were scared of him, and whatever he says goes. And he took us into the Boys and Girls Club and, taught us, all the sports, the sportsmanship, the arts and craft, and all those type of things. So our Boys Club was just games rooms and, arts and craft rooms. So we didn't have a swimming pool, gym, all that type of stuff. So we had to makeshift that. But getting started in basketball is I've seen Dr. J play for the first time. I guess it's one of those nights you up because it was a rerun that they played because every game didn't come on, and I got to see Dr. J. And, you can't play like him, so you just go out and do those type of things. But all my buddies played basketball, so that's the reason I went out. In the seventh grade, after football season, walking home and no friends to play with. All of them played basketball, so that's why I just went out for basketball in seventh grade.
When did you know that you were pretty good at that basketball thing?
Well, my seventh grade year, the guys didn't have the grades and conduct, a couple of them to play, and us guys that bust up butt and ran up and down the court and did what the coach said. I got to play the first game, and I scored 22 points that first game I ever played in seventh grade and fell in love with the game.
So did I read it right, though? You mentioned the guys who, you know, got in trouble. Would you have been on the team but just maybe not played as much, or would you not have even been on the team if they were able to stay in their lane and mind their P's and Q's?
That's a good question, because there was a lot of good guys that was on the team and that were very good.
Okay, Spud, I imagine over your career a number of times, as a matter of fact, I know this just based on college opportunities and where you got drafted and all this stuff, that you had people who looked at you, looked at your size, and just doubted you. How did you deal with all that? Was that something you just naturally were able to say, you know what, screw these people? Or was it a process for you to learn how to deal with people looking at you and not giving you the fair chance that maybe you deserved?
Yeah, you just never got a fair chance because, you know, it was always bigger, better, faster. It's always been that. That's nothing new. And, I didn't play but varsity 1 year at Wilma Hutchins because, you know, he probably thought I was too small or couldn't play, whatever the coach there thought. And then I played the 1 year, my senior year of varsity basketball, and averaged 26 points. So I always fought that. And then going to college, you get no scholarships. And a guy came along named Jerry Stone, coaching at Midland, and asked me if I wanted Midland. Like, I have nowhere else to go. All-American, all-city, averaged 26 points, and everything you can do as a senior. They didn't let that time. They didn't let us make up McDonald's All-American, but we was all-state and all that. But then you get to Midland and win the National Junior College Championship, MVP of the tournament. We probably lost one game in conference and no scholarship. So I guess some guy at NC State changed his mind, and I was the only point guard without a scholarship. And Tom Abetamarco asked me to come visit NC State and play 2 years there, and lucky enough to play for the infamous coach Jim Valvano.
I guess about the guys now and probably then aspire to be NBA players. They get that big time scholarship out of high school. They're getting all the attention and they just feel like they're invincible and they don't need a backup plan because they're NBA bound. And for some guys it works out, other guys it didn't. For you, not playing more than, as you mentioned, 1 year of varsity basketball and not getting a big time college opportunity, were you still pushing for the NBA, or were you just trying to play basketball as long as they let you? Like, was that still, hey, you know what, I'm an NBA player, and they're going to find out eventually? Or did you just think, hey, I'm going to play through college, and then I'll figure out what's next? Kind of, where were you as far as your desire to play in the NBA at that point of your life?
Yeah, because you know you didn't have all this social media stuff to look up stuff to see what's going on. But I went off of just, hey, if I'm doing good against these guys that are going pro at North Carolina State and college and all-star college games, then I can play on the next level. And, and back then they had like, I don't know how many rounds of getting drafted. So I ended up getting drafted in Detroit in the fourth round. There's only two rounds now. And the Bill Blakely came to me and goes, you know, he wanted to be your agent and all those type of things. And he was a coach at North Texas for a couple of years where a couple of my friends out of my neighborhood ended up going to North Texas. So he said, the Gold Trotters are calling. But he said, I want you to play in the NBA and you can play in the NBA. He probably in that 1%, or maybe the only guy that ever thought that I could play in the NBA. So he would call around to a different teams trying to see. And I think when Detroit drafted me, the Lakers and then Atlanta Hawks were the only other two teams that were interested.
And this was back when, you know, the draft was, you know, now it's two rounds. Back then it was more, there weren't many guys, you were a fourth round pick, right? There weren't many guys in the fourth round who ended up making it. And even if they did, they certainly didn't have the career that you had, you know, longevity and success and whatnot. When did you feel like you finally were settling in and all of a sudden, hey, you know what? This height thing isn't, people aren't really talking about that. They're looking at me not as Spud Webb, the 5'7" basketball player. They're looking at me as Spud Webb, the basketball player, the point guard. Did you ever feel like that ever happened? And when did that happen, if it did?
Well, it really didn't happen until I went to camp with Atlanta and started to see that they had all these scores with Dominique. They had, you know, Kevin Willis, Antoine Carr, Doc Rivers. They had all these scores, Randy Whitman, and, like, there's nobody passing the ball. So I figured if I could pass the ball and get people shots, that you would get noticed and people would appreciate you. And then, you know, as training camp went on, and kept playing well, but they had the guy that they was talking about picking me with, Cedric Toney, as the guy that was going to make the team. But I end up, let's see how to get this straight. The first regular season NBA game I saw, I started in and had 18 points and 10 assists. So I don't know how many guys can say that the first NBA game, regular season game I saw, I started in and scored 18 points and 10 assists. So growing up, you know, you just didn't see live basketball. Like, we had the Mavericks and kids and high school and college kids and college kids getting ready to go pro, get to see an NBA game. I'd never seen one before. So I played in it.
So the first NBA game you saw was your first ever NBA game as a player?
As a player.
Did you watch anything on TV? Like, were there guys that you maybe followed or looked up to growing up or not even really in that capacity?
Like I said, we didn't get to see a lot of games because, you know, just they weren't shown and you couldn't have the time to look at them because you were doing other things. But like I said, I saw Dr. J on a late night game because they used to show him late at night on Fridays. That we see, watch the finals or Sunday ABC game or whatever they play. And that's how you seen your NBA game back then. You just didn't have a lot of resources then.
Spud, I guess I can ask this as a fellow short person. Did you take pride in being known as a short NBA player, or did it annoy you that everyone always constantly attached that to you?
It annoyed me because everywhere you went, you know, because of my jumping ability, it was always people want to see you jump. You never appreciated the way you play basketball. That's why I stopped getting in dunk contests, is because it was getting so bad. And Doc Rivers go, it doesn't matter. You already did it. You would never live it down. And I'm like, he's not joking. It's like every building you walk in, people want to talk about the dunk contest, or they want you to dunk. Or they say they were there at Reunion Arena that day, which I had 100,000 people tell me that, which is only holds like 18,000 people.
Someone's lying.
Somebody's lying somewhere.
But I was not there, so I will not claim that I was. Do you like talking? And now that you're done playing, do you like talking about the dunk contest, or do you not like talking about it?
Oh, no, I don't have any problem. Everywhere I go, I talk sports with different people because around here, you know, in Dallas, I'm a diehard Dallas everything, from Dallas Mavericks to Dallas Cowboys, Stars, everything. So every time I go to the country club to play golf or the cigar bar, somebody's going to come over with a question in sports. So I live sports. I love sports, so I don't mind talking.
You could have won the dunk contest anywhere, but it happened at Reunion Arena, and we mentioned, more than mentioned, this is where you grew up. So how extra special was it for you to win that in your home, in your hometown, you know, your hometown's arena?
Well, it's extra special because, you know, if you mess up, that's all they're going to remember, too, is that this kid came home and got in a dunk contest and couldn't dunk. But I knew the repertoire dunks I could do. You know, it's extra pressure when you have to do it in front of your hometown. But I didn't know any better as a young 22-year-old that was reckless and abandoned to make the keep playing in the NBA. And they actually asked me to be in a dunk contest like a week before. It wasn't like, you know, they gave me this where you can go on YouTube or go on this and see some dunks and all that stuff. It just wasn't like that back then. So those dunks I was doing down in South Dallas my senior year in high school and all through college when I come home and play summer league ball.
Now, is it true that you kind of sandbagged your teammate Dominique Wilkins and made him think that you really didn't have a whole lot in your bag of tricks to make sure that he, you know, he didn't come extra prepared, or is that just a myth?
That's a myth because I was busy trying to make the team. So after practice, you didn't have time to sit around like I see the guys today doing the props, dunks, and all that. We were so busy trying to make the team that Doc Rivers and Tree Rollins and them would make us stay after practice and work on, you know, what they thought was our weakness. And then a lot of the older guys like would, you know, want you to play them one-on-one and keep in shape. So you didn't have time to sit around and work on dunk contests.
Who's the best dunker you've seen in that sort of a setting? And then who's the best game dunker that you've seen?
Well, Dominique covered both of them for me because he does them in games. He does them in dunk contests. He does them in warm-ups. Sometimes we would be sitting in film, you know, watching our film against the other team, and we end up watching Dominique. we end up walking out the meeting up to the floor talking about, man, I know we saw it, but to see it in slow motion or a replay of how he dunked on somebody was incredible.
All right, now, one thing that I don't think people, whether, it, you know, they just don't realize it or they don't know it, is that, you know, you were an outstanding free throw shooter in one season when you were with the Kings, and it was the 94-95 season. Not only did you lead the league in free throw shooting, but you shot dang near 94%. So how much pride did you take in that, you know, not only being a great free throw shooter, but being the league leader in that category in that particular season?
Yeah, when I played in Atlanta, Doc Rivers used to get on my case. He's like, if you're going to play on this team, we know he's going to be a coach anyway, that you need to learn to shoot free throws because at the end of the game, the point guard had the ball. And then Kazzy Russell, which played in the league, was our assistant coach, and he was a great free throw shooter. So after practice, all of us would, you know, wager on who shoot the best, most free throws in a row, or who make the most in a row before we would leave practice. And it paid off when I got traded to Sacramento. I took pride in making free throws. 94, I wanted to get high as I could because at that time, Reggie Miller, Mark Price, Larry Bird, I mean, when I played, those the top 10 probably free throw shooters, you know, only person I can remember that probably could come in there is Steph Curry now of having the highest percentage. And I take pride because nobody actually brings up that you won the percentage free throw shooting in 1 year. And that could be a quiz because you can say, who won the dunk, what slam dunk contest won the free throw percentage 1 year? Nobody would get that.
I would, Spud. And after broadcasting with you, I know the answer to that.
Job.
Spud, I was watching. I went back. You know, a lot of people have been watching old versions, you know, old games of, you know, this team or that team. And, you know, I wasn't alive when the Dallas Mavericks in 1988 took the Lakers to Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. And until the Mavs made the finals in 06, I think it's fair to say that their Game 6 win over the Lakers was the biggest win in franchise history. So I went back. I'd never seen that. I went and watched it, and I guess I'm not totally surprised by this. I know that the game has evolved tremendously, but in that particular game, the two teams combined to take 15 threes. Now you're seeing teams take 15 threes by the midpoint of the second quarter. Heck, the Rockets probably do that in a quarter.
In the first quarter.
Yeah, and it was, Brent Musburger was calling the game, and when Rolando Blackman would take an 18-footer, Brent Musburger would talk about Rolando Blackman taking an outside shot or from the perimeter, and it was amazing for me to really see. I knew the game had evolved, but to truly see it. And I'm curious, you played in an era where making 1 3 a game was a lot. Larry Bird, I don't think ever made 2 threes per game, on average. And now we're in an era where, it's normal if a guy's attempting 7 8 threes a game. What are your thoughts on the way the game has evolved, and do you like the way that the game has evolved?
First of all, I'm going to start off, I really don't. I'm really old school. And it's just hard for me to sit down and watch a guy dribble around 1,900 times until he get a shot. All the threes. I don't like it, but that's what the game is involved to. That's what we look for with the legends, the guys that can shoot threes. And I'd rather, like, they've been showing old school since everybody been sitting at home. And the guys come around and go, man, to make a turnaround jump shot and, you come off pick and get a shot like you said, Rolando. It's like you playing team basketball. I like what you want to play with a guy that just dribble around and shoot all the time. It's just hard for me to watch it. I have to watch it because of my job, but I really don't like it. And I really like watching guys because that play team basketball. So you watch Milwaukee, you watch San Antonio, and LeBron will make them play half court until he starts getting in the mood of just jacking threes. So it's kind of hard to watch, but, that's what it's evolved to, a bunch of guys shooting threes. I think I was watching one game, it was like 97 threes shot. I'm like...
it's unbelievable. Now it's not uncommon to see a team take more threes than twos, and that was unheard of back in the day.
Yeah, that's the analytics of the game today. And, I thought I'd never see a team win a championship doing it, but Golden State is the exception. I think we won't see no team winning, shooting threes like that, I don't think.
Spud, you played with some really, really good players. We've already talked about Dominique Wilkins, at the end of your career, very briefly on Orlando when they had some top-end talent. And then in between your time with Sacramento and, you spent some time with Minnesota. Who's a guy who maybe never got the publicity that like a Dominique Wilkins got, who you just were always so impressed by? He was just someone who was a really, really good player, but for whatever reason, never got that sort of fanfare and attention that some of those stars got.
You could name a bunch of guys that you thought that was all-stars or should have been starting. But, and like you say, when I was in Atlanta, played with Dominique Moses, Reggie Theus, Kevin Willis, Doc Rivers. I played with a lot of good players, and then got to Sacramento with Mitch Richmond, which is all NBA for about 4 years. Three of the years that I was a point guard there, and I played with Kevin Garnett his rookie year in Minnesota. And then when I was in Orlando for the short stint, they still had Penny Hardaway. So, it's a lot of guys that, that had really good talent that you would say, hey, if he was another team, he'd be a star. Like Kevin Willis, I played with Kevin Willis. We always thought that if he was on another team, he would be in a star. But because he was with, Moses, Dominique, Doc Rivers and things like that, that he didn't get the publicity that I think Kevin played 22 years and nobody knew that.
Yeah, he had an unreal career, right?
Yes. Still a good guy. We still talk today that, got his clothing business. So I try to keep up with the guys, especially the ones that play golf.
Who's the best of your former teammates or guys maybe you didn't play with but played against? Who's the best golfer?
That I played against or played with?
Either one.
Either one. Dominique can't count. I think that Georgia education comes out sometime, you know, right down the right score. But no, I play with Ron Harper a lot. Me and him are really good friends. Try to win one of those five rings he got off of him. Oakley, well, we just let Oakley get in the cart by itself, though. Who won't want nobody to mess with Oakley? Those guys, that's my group I play with. But John Starks is a really good golfer. Greg Anthony is a really good golfer that I play with all the time when we go to charity events. But Lawrence Taylor is really good. And if I had to pick one person to be my partner, it would be Sterling Sharpe. He can play.
Really?
Yes.
All right.
And he tells you. He's just like his brother. Run his mouth. He tell you how good he is on the golf course.
Not only can he play, but they both can talk, Sterling and Shannon.
Oh, my God. They love themselves.